Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. Congrats. You're going to win a four-pack of tickets to the Freedom 250 Grand Prix. IndyCar is zooming into history with the first ever race around the National Mall, August 22nd and the 23rd, 4 days out this weekend. Get race ready with all the information you need to know over at freedom250gp.com. We've got your tickets throughout the week right here on Grant and Danny, exclusively at 4 o'clock on our show each and every day on The Fan. I really want to get my family out to that this weekend.
So unique. I mean, again, how many times is that going to happen here? Maybe one other time in our lifetime, but it's such an unusual once-in-a-lifetime type occurrence, man. It's really neat.
Let's get to your Beltway Blitz, the Nats, the NFL, the Commanders, all in one segment. We'll start with Kyle Williams of the Baltimore Banner on our Beltway Blitz. Kyle, C.J. Abrams is moving to second base from shortstop. Two-parter here. When is he going to start playing second every day? And then also, how has he taken the move? It doesn't seem like he's thrilled about it.
Yeah, so when we asked Blake about the timeline, he said it's mostly a matter of days as to when we'll see it, rather than, you know, weeks at in which we will see it. And CJ, when we talked to him Friday, there's something different about his demeanor. Like, and obviously so. You know, shortstop's one of those positions like a quarterback in football. It's your identity. Like, you're not just playing shortstop. You are a shortstop. Like, that's who you are. And he didn't seem, you know, too thrilled about it. He was asked, you know, does he still view himself as a shortstop long term? And he said, I do. And so that kind of tells you right then and there, just like, he wants to be shortstop. He wants to be, you know, play shortstop. And he, you know, to his credit, though, he's willing to try out second base to help the team win. But it's clear he wasn't, you know, this isn't what he would have wanted.
So, Kyle, take his feelings aside, and you can't in real life, of course. You got to consider it. He's one of your leaders. He's had such an unbelievable offensive season, etc. But there's a very easy case to be made here from a baseball perspective that they could have done this at any time. And Grant and I both been focused on this. We both wonder kind of why now. What made sense about this move to do it now?
That's the part that I've been, you know, trying to figure out, because this is weird timing in terms of, you know, he's not moving to second to accommodate one of their, you know, Seaver King or Eli Willis. He's not, or, you know, a free agent signing. It's just seems like not out of the blue, because, you know, we talked to Blake and he said they've been, you know, him and Paul and Ami have been deliberating about this move for the past, you know, couple of weeks or so. So it was a decision that they put much thought into. But the timing is weird, because if the timing is just to see how Nassim plays at short and how CJ handles second, then why not put that off until the offseason and give CJ a full runway to, you know, prepare as a second baseman going into next year? So it's still weird in that, you know, it was just kind of random. I mean, you guys have probably heard the press conference we had with Blake. Like, he opened it up by saying, like, CJ Abrams is going to be playing second base moving forward. Like, it wasn't, you know, a report. It wasn't a scoop or anything. He offered it up. So maybe they just wanted, you know, give CJ a look at second base, you know, in terms of, you know, the trade value. Like, because a lot of teams around the majors don't view him as a shortstop long term. And I guess just seeing if he can handle second base, you know, would help in trade discussions.
I saw that Josiah Gray is pitching in single A at Fredericksburg, I think tonight, but pretty amazing. He missed almost all of 24 because he blew out his arm in the second start of the season. So basically the 24 season, the 25 season, and now the entirety of the 26 season. So we're going on almost three calendar years without him pitching. He keeps coming back, though, and to his credit, with all the setbacks, he keeps trying to make a comeback. What do you make of this story?
Yeah, it's. I mean, because, you know, when we're in this business, it's easy to look at things through, like, their performance or how they're, you know, what their stats are. But, like, at the end of the day, these guys are human. And imagine not being able to do the thing you loved for, you know, basically 2 years, like you mentioned. Like, and so when you see a guy miss 2 years or, you know, get limited throughout most of 2 years, like, that's his livelihood. That's his career. That's his identity for the most part. And so to see him work his way back and to be in a position where he's, you know, pitching again, that's a big momentous, like, milestone for him. And just, it should be rooted on, because, you know, obviously it predates my time on the beat, but just talking with people around the org about Josiah, like, he's a guy that people love being around. He's a popular guy. And so to see him, you know, navigate those troubles and then come out the other side and, you know, inch ever closer to, you know, returning, that's a positive sign.
Latest on James Wood. I miss him. I need him back in the lineup. What's going on?
So James, they're going to press pause a little bit on, you know, his recovery from the oblique. The tightness and discomfort is still there. Blake said, he said that Sunday. And so it's one of those things, you know, with oblique, you need in every part of baseball, you need your oblique to be healthy and intact. And with James, it just hasn't responded the way that I think they would have liked to this point. And so, you know, he's still doing stuff on the field. He's throwing, but it's not progressing at the rate in which he should be returning to play, you know, anytime soon.
Kyle, thank you, buddy. Good catching up as always.
All right, great catching up. Thank you guys for having me on.
You got to check him out, Baltimore Banner. Let's talk football. And to help us do that, Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports on G&D. Frank, Juju Smith-Schuster, I'm old enough to remember when he was a stud with the Pittsburgh Steelers, released today with the New York Giants, kind of slowly, year by year on a staircase, has gone in the other direction. He's not that old. What happened with him?
I don't know. I mean, I think part of it was he was very lucky to be playing alongside one of the greatest receivers of all time, and Antonio Brown, who was occupying everybody's coverages, and he found some open areas playing with a really good quarterback and Ben. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to. He was so good. I think it was the second year that he really, really broke out. And, you know, he came into the NFL at a young age. So he was 21, 22 when he had his huge breakout. And it just went completely sideways after that. And usually it's an injury. Like, you know, some guy tears an ACL or tears an Achilles and he's never quite the same. This was just a really, really quick fall. And like you said, he's not even old now, but, you know, he's been kind of irrelevant for a few years. And with this release, it's like, I assume the end of the line for him, unless somebody really needs some veteran help.
Are the Seahawks really going to sign Terrion Arnold? It seems like he's pretty radioactive and there's a lot of flirtation there. And I guess Arnold would go on the commissioner's exempt list, right? For however long. What's going on there?
I mean, the nature of the NFL is if they don't sign him, somebody will. That's what I just said. And I'm being a little cynical and sarcastic to just say, why didn't the Lions just hold on to him? Because somebody else is going to sign him. It seems lining up to sign a guy who's facing 8 felonies. I mean, that's, we like to think that the NFL, some teams are above it. They're not. All these teams care about is winning. And that's fine. Hey, it's a business. And, you know, these coaches and GMs who get fired, they're not kept on the job because, hey, you had a lot of good citizens in the community, but you went 4-13. Like, you got to win. Terrion Arnold gets the Seattle Seahawks or the Giants who are poking around on him or anybody else closer to winning. But it is kind of gross, isn't it? I mean, come on. Like, this is some serious stuff he's facing. But, you know, as I said, if it's not the Seahawks, it's going to be someone. And they're just going to say, because it's such a low-risk thing, if you think about it, other than, like, the PR hits, if you take any. Money-wise, you're probably giving Terrion Arnold a nothing contract that has no guaranteed money. And, you know, if he, you know, it ends up going to jail like he might, just cut him and you move on. It's no big deal money-wise. And if he somehow beats this, well, you got a first-round cornerback who's, what, 24, 25 years old? So that's the risk as far as the salary cap goes and the football reasons. It's really not that great. That's why I understand why teams are poking around on him.
Which I get. It just feels weird. And I'm a guy that always says, like, if somebody gets in trouble while they're on my team, let's let it play out. Let's make sure. Let due process. But signing him after this, it just feels different. Yeah. Like, he wasn't there already. You're just pouncing on this opportunity, basically, with all of these things and allegations out there. Kind of crazy. Moving on to the Jaguars and Travis Hunter. So he took 0 11-on-11 reps on offense to kick off the week. It sounds like they're going to start ramping up more of his defensive workload and less of his offensive stuff going into the season. I guess two-parter on this. Number one, what do you make of this? But then second, they traded up and paid a pretty penny to go up and get him, and I'd imagine it was to be a two-way player. Sounds like he still could be, but are we trending toward him being basically like a corner who just plays a couple snaps on offense? And if so, is that a bad trade that they made to go up and get him? Or if he's an elite corner, I guess, does it still work out?
I mean, terrible trade, honestly. Unless he's, look, if he's Darrell Revis in his prime, yeah, okay. But, you know, you drafted him higher than any cornerbacks have ever been drafted. You traded up to draft him, and you traded a lot to get up and draft him. And the reason, as they said it on draft day, Tony Boselli, I think is their president of football operations or whatever title he has, he said, we basically thought we were getting two players with one pick. That's the attitude you should have, right? Like, he was a unicorn in college. That's why he won Heisman. Yeah, if you make him just a cornerback, it's not that juice ain't worth the squeeze anymore. Unless he's just the most elite cornerback in the NFL, which, honestly, he could be. He's that good of an athlete. But, yeah, I don't like it. I always wanted to see this, have them see this thing through. I think he was such a unique player, and it seemed like they had a plan, and it seemed like they ditched that plan really quickly. And more out of need than anything. If you look, they're thin at corner, but at receiver, they have Jacoby Myers, they have Brian Thomas Jr., they have Parker Washington. You're already pretty set there, so you can play him at corner almost all of the time. I do think he's going to play some offense. I do, but it's just going to be 20% of the snaps. Is that enough? I mean, can you really get into a groove as an NFL receiver playing one-fifth at a time or fourth at a time or whatever it's going to end up being? I just wanted them to – I thought that they were the team that – I mean, they talk big. They talk like, hey, we want to do this. We know it's different, but we're going to do this. And then to give that up after 1 year, maybe, I don't love it. I just wanted to see it because he's just such a unique guy.
Frank, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
Yep, absolutely. Appreciate it.
You got it, man. Hit that Local 53 sounder, please, Darius. We just did NFL, and now we're doing the Local 53 for the Washington area. This is Mitch Tischler, Monumental Sports, to talk about the football boys. Mitch, have they been intense enough in training camp, preseason, et cetera?
I mean, it's certainly been much more intense than it was last year. Whenever they're in pads, we're seeing full two-hour practices, and they're going hard and fast every day. Today was kind of the first day of camp that I was a little bit, you know, hey, you just came off of not quite three straight off days, but three straight days without full practices. And they were scheduled to be in pads today and ultimately ended up just doing shells. I think they had a bunch of guys, you know, kind of nicked up, banged up, didn't want to, you know, push it too hard. But for the most part, yes, this year's camp has been much more intense, much harder than certainly last year's was.
Mitch, at about 5:30 today, I'm going to get into PFF's O-line rankings. They went 1-32, all 32 teams going into the season. And after the Tunsil injury, they had Washington 32nd, dead last in their offensive line rankings, which seems a little bit crazy to me, but I digress. How concerned or worried are you right now about this offensive line?
I'm a medium level of concern. I mean, certainly since the Tunsil injury, I think is a little bit of a cascading effect where, you know, it challenges the depth across the O-line. But I understand the bigger picture across the NFL. You go from a, you know, top, what, three or four offensive tackle in Laremy Tunsil to Brandon Coleman that I think, you know, nationally certainly has a lot of question marks, certainly locally has a lot of question marks as well. You go from, you know, Tyler Biadasz, who is a, you know, steady Eddie center, to Nick Allegretti, who's relatively unproven at that position. I think there are real questions. You look at Chris Paul even, you know, he had a decent season last year, hit the open market. Nobody wanted to touch him. He ended up coming back to Washington on a, you know, a pretty minimal deal. There are a lot of questions, and I understand why PFF, you know, would have them ranked there. I would say that I think Brandon Coleman is pretty strongly underrated by both fans locally and nationally. I don't think he's going to give you anything close to what Laremy Tunsil would, but I think he's going to give you solid left tackle play. To me, the big question is kind of on the interior, and it starts with Nick Allegretti, but it also relates to Chris Paul as well, who I think, you know, last year did have a decent season, but playing when you're a center, playing between Laremy Tunsil and Tyler Biadasz, you know, covers up a lot of potential, you know, zits when you have guys who are, you know, as seasoned as those guys are. Now you turn to Brandon Coleman on one side and Nick Allegretti on the other, and all of a sudden there's a lot more pressure on Chris. It makes his job a little bit tougher than it was last year, so certainly there are some real questions, but to me, I think, you know, you look at the totality of the group combined with the offense that David Blau is going to run, and you hope that it's enough to make up for some of those question marks, or those question marks come out and play really well. And we're sitting here in week five saying, man, they really made the right decision, you know, letting Biadasz walk. Obviously, he had the injury today, so, you know, it's a bigger story. He got carted off the field in L.A. at practice. you know, maybe you're saying, hey, they made the right decision with Allegretti there because he plays really well.
Double clicking on Chris Paul for a second. You answered part of this question, but I want to go deeper into maybe why there is so much intrigue or concern. I mean, I started to hear that Coleman might overtake him for the left guard spot before the Tunsil injury. There was some type of combination, you know, or competition going on there between that combination of guys. And you think about it, like, he went to free agency. There were reports out there that he was going to get a ton of money. He didn't really get that offer. And so he kind of came back here for 80 cents on the dollar, tail between his legs a little bit. How sure are we that he was awesome last year?
I mean, I think as much as I am probably one of the people most confident in what Brandon Coleman can do at left tackle, I probably have equal angst, if you will, with Chris Paul. I mean, Brandon Coleman beat him out last year at a camp, and Brandon Coleman was the starter, obviously, until injuries and whatnot took over. I think Brandon Coleman ultimately would have been your starting left guard to start this season had Laremy Tunsil, you know, injury not happened. But all that being said, you know, ifs and nuts were candy and whatever that saying is, you know, you can talk about it a million different ways. I think Chris Paul got a lot of help last year with the center left tackle combination that was on either side of him, and also with an offense that is, you know, in shotgun as much as it was last year. While it makes it a little bit easier for the defense, it also can make it a little bit easier in ways on an offensive line and particularly a guard. I think that I have real questions about how that Chris Paul, Mick Allegretti inside left portion of the offensive line is going to play. And quite frankly, we're going to get some answers early on in the season when you look at, you know, Philly, Dallas, and Seattle, you know, coming at you right out the chute there.
Mitch, thank you as always, buddy.
Hey, don't forget to thank Toby Altimer for calling me out today, Grant. I forgot last time I was on to mention Toby's new nickname, but I think
that's right.
I think you guys need to incorporate that into the show a little bit.
How do you like it? I was saying I think it's really, really good at practice. Instead of Toby Altizer, Toby Altimer.
Toby Altimer, meaning he's always on, like he's there from dawn to dusk?
More like legend, goat status.
Oh, the Altimer.
Like, he's an Altimer.
I got you.
He's a superstar producer and personality and everything else across the board for you guys.
He does a lot of stuff.
He's, you know, he's an all-timer. He's Toby Altimer.
All right. Hey, Danny, you guys can workshop that a little bit, but I wanted to put it out in the ether, and if it ends up taking hold, just I want some royalties.
You'll get credit. You'll get credit, for sure. I mean, obviously, tens of dollars will change hands, but it's just I don't want that ego to get too big. Do you know what I mean? We got to keep it in check a little bit. He's already got several characters that he plays, alter egos and stuff. He's a little bit full of himself sometimes.
All
you know
ties
what I mean?
Are egos.
Yeah.
I mean, Danny, you're handling a lot of egos on that side, so I understand that you don't want to boost up anybody else there.
You get it. You get it, Mitch. You know what it's like.
Thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
See you, bud.
Be good. There's Mitch Dischler of Monumental Sports joining us on our Beltway Blitz. Next, I want to get into C.J. Abrams. There was a story in The Athletic today that he is not thrilled about moving to second base, which I thought was pretty clear when he said, I think of myself as a shortstop. We told you that he had not taken that well to the conversation, to the decision to move him over, but now you've got his agent, Mike Sanders of Rock Nation, on the record saying that his client is not thrilled. We'll talk about that next and what it means for a possible Abrams extension on The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan. I do want to get into the Commanders' offensive line next hour. PFF saying it's the worst offensive line in football going into the season. Is there any argument for that? I'm going to push back a little bit. We'll get into that in about an hour. By the way, 5 in 30 minutes, Mike Florio joins the show from Pro Football Talk. Where does he weigh in on our debate as to whether or not Roger Goodell is right when he says there's going to be an NFL team based internationally in the next 20 years. That's coming up on Grant and Danny. I also want to get his thoughts. Have you seen any of the pictures, videos coming out of the Bills' new stadium where there are a bunch of seats that are completely blocked and you can't see the field?
Incredible that it's happening in the year 2026.
It really is.
Incredible.
Stunning. But I think it's a blessing in disguise for this ownership group, which I think is being very meticulous and doing this correctly, and Mark Klaus and all those people over there are very, very smart, and I trust them to do it right. But good for them to see what happened, make a couple calls over to Buffalo when the dust settles a little bit.
How did that happen?
Hey, how do we not have those tweets the first time we have people in our stadium?
It's only slightly analogous, but I saw this the other day. My wife follows this a bunch of these like different kind of home project contractor type people on the Instagrams, right? And she showed me this one where this guy was going through, here is a new $3 million construction, this beautiful looking home. Well, you go inside and, you know, this stair doesn't match up. And this part of the foundation is a full, you know, 3.5 inches higher than 2 feet away. And it's this, and this is sinking, and that. And so it's the whole point is they built it quickly to try to get it done and move on to the next thing instead of being meticulous about that. Right, you get to a certain point, it's a point of no return. You're going, oh my God, this pillar is going to be in the way of this seat. Oh well, bring him in. You know, what are you going to do? You have to avoid that.
I want to get into C.J. Abrams' move to second, though, and the Nats news of the week here. And this is big. This is many years in the making. Abrams, who has struggled defensively at short since he got to the big leagues and is inevitably going to have to move. We've been saying this for years. It's happening. And the timing is odd to me. I don't know another way to say it other than after the game stopped mattering that much, and while simultaneously the team seems to be saying Seaver King's not coming up imminently in the next couple of days. I think he will be up in September. Plus, you don't want to move CJ for a prospect. That would not look very good. Kind of the face of your franchise with James Wood and an all-star. You're not making room for Seaver King, who may or may not even stay at short because ultimately Eli Willits is going to play that position. It's kind of strange that they are moving him to second base now. Although I'm team move him to second base and have been since the day this staff took over. I said to Paul Toboni when he was sitting in this seat last offseason, I said, are you moving CJ to second? And he's like, no, we're going to watch him. We think he can play short. We're going to figure that out. It was a matter of time, and the time, I guess, is now. But we just had a Nats reporter on minutes ago in Kyle Williams from the Baltimore Banner on our Beltway Blitz, and we asked him how CJ's been handling this move behind the scenes and how he's taking the news that they're moving him off the shortstop position.
When we asked Blake about a timeline, he said it's mostly a matter of days as to when we'll see it rather than, you know, weeks at in which we will see it. And CJ, when we talked to him Friday, there's something different about his demeanor. Like and obviously so, you know, shortstop's one of those positions like a quarterback in football. It's your identity. Like, you're not just playing shortstop. You are a shortstop. Like, that's who you are. And he didn't seem, you know, too thrilled about it. He was asked, you know, does he still view himself as a shortstop long term? And he said, I do. And so that kind of tells you right then and there, just like, he wants to be shortstop. He wants to be, you know, play shortstop. And he, you know, to his credit, though, he's willing to try out second base to help the team win. But it's clear he wasn't, you know, this isn't what he would have wanted.
So that's Kyle from the Baltimore Banner, who was just on the Blitz. Abrams has had an unbelievable season. Part of why this is weird, Danny, is he's finally put it together offensively. Yep. He's got an .885 OPS. He's got 29 homers and 90 driven in. He's the major league leader in runs batted in. He's going to have a 30-homer, 100-run batted in season as a middle infielder. Those guys are really, really hard to find. There's immense value in that. If you were going to trade him, you'd get a ton back, a Soto-like kind of package for him at this point. And that brings me to the Spencer Nussbaum column in The Athletic today, or the reporting that he did, where the headline is, C.J. Abrams not thrilled with change, agent says, but focus remains on Nationals. So the second paragraph here does some damage control a little bit for the team, for, you know, kind of the piece that he's writing and whatnot. And we're going to talk to Spencer coming up in 90 minutes at 6 o'clock, but he says, 3 days after the announcement, both Abrams' camp and the Nationals' front office praised each other as strong partners in the decision, signaling a desire to find common ground despite lingering disagreement about the timing with the necessity of the position change, end quote. That's like a, hey, it's going to be okay, these guys like each other kind of paragraph. But that's not the lead of this story. The lead of this story is this quote from Mike Sanders, the agent for C.J. Abrams from Roc Nation, where he says, I think first, C.J. was not thrilled about the decision to move him off shortstop. Now, he's not going to be thrilled, as Paul Toboni has pointed out, including in this piece. He shouldn't be thrilled. If you came to me and demoted me and took me off of our time slot and put me on, you know, late nights or the weekends or whatever, I probably wouldn't be thrilled either. But the fact that the agent is speaking publicly to say as much is a really, really big deal. Because whatever you're saying publicly as an agent is like 10% of what you'd like to say. You know what I mean? Like, this is not what an agent would typically do. They don't come out
quite literally the tip of the iceberg type expression, right?
Exactly.
We don't see the depths down below.
Now, Paul Toboni said, if I'm CJ, of course I'm upset. It'd be weird if he wasn't. CJ has been a shortstop his whole life, and it's a huge part of his baseball identity. If I didn't sense he was upset, I'd be worried that he wasn't being real with us. So that's a good quote from Paul Toboni, who's a real guy and I've really enjoyed working with and talking to because he's always pretty honest. But here's what happened. The team decided to move Abrams. We can talk about the timing, which is the only part of this that I think is a little bit strange. And Abrams doesn't want to go to second base necessarily, but he's going to do it because what choice does he have? Right. And you can throw a temper tantrum or you could just say, I'll do what's best for the team. But I don't think this is a, hey, man, I'm happy to be here. I'll do what's best for the team. I think this is a, whatever, dude. I'll do what's best for the team. I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, it's a tacit agreement.
This, to me, is the first step toward him getting traded in the offseason. That's where I'm at on this. I do not think this ends with an extension, and I also don't feel like there's a whole lot of reason, necessarily, to go into next season with him on the roster and wait till the deadline, unless the work stoppage is so convoluted and takes so much time that it's hard to get any real baseball business done. But Danny, went by him handling this, I needed to know, how does he take this? How does he feel? So I did my own digging right away and just asked around and kind of got the feeling he wasn't that happy about it. But if he was cool with it, it would have been the other way for me, where I would have said, hey, you can now pay him like a second baseman. He's happy to play second. Let's give him, you know, close to $30 million over 8 years and make him the highest paid second baseman ever, and let's sign him to an extension. But by him saying he's a shortstop, which, by the way, he's not going to be a shortstop long-term in his career, I think this is kind of the beginning of the end in terms of him here. Do you think that's overstated?
No, I think it's 100% on point. And we get to the same conclusion slightly differently. I think the team, because you're willing to put up, it's a push and pull. You're willing to put up with certain things. Like, think back to the Wizards and having Bojan Bogdanovic on the roster. That guy could shoot the lights out. They were going to go at him defensively. How much? What's worth it? Well, if you're shooting the lights out and opening things up for everybody else, you just deal with the fact that he might get picked on defense. Same with, say, Trae Young now, right? He's worth it, but the net result is, yeah, they're going to find him when he's got to play some defense. If you've got a guy that's in a good place mentally and is hitting the bleep out of the ball and is behind, like, Yordan Alvarez and one other player in terms of offensive war and leads the league in RBIs and is having the renaissance season, and you're willing to do this to ruffle the feathers, because that's what this is. It's a feather ruffle. You're willing to do that. You're basically saying we're not as concerned anymore about you liking us long term. It reads to me like a team going, we know we're not signing him to an extension, so we're just going to do the best baseball thing. Because again, take every bit of personality, ego, et cetera, out of it and go, what's the best defensive lineup? Oh, that's Nassim Nunez at shortstop and CJ Abrams at second. Maybe him DHing more often than not, honestly. You could throw name that jag there at second base or whatever, right? And long-term, he's not a shortstop. We don't view him as that. But he does. What's worth it? Him being happy and making, you know, an error every 2 weeks more than the average peer, or, well, he's hitting the bleep out of the ball, or just saying, hey, this is what's best. Maybe you can do some combination of both. If you know you're not going to resign him and you're not going to be worried long-term about him being as happy and locked in, then you make the move. And that's how it reads to me, is as a, we know we're not signing him, so what's the next step? Obviously, as you said, this offseason, 2 years of arbitration and control left, you get a tremendous haul. That's how it reads to me, as if they say, we were concerned about, if we're in it, him being happy and pleased, then yeah, he's going to kick one, he's going to lead the league, or be last in the league, in defensive runs saved, among the worst in the position, both just statistically, eye test, everything of the sort. We can live with that, because the offensive production is so great, we don't want to do anything to mess with that.
By the way, there might be a team that trades for him that plays him at shortstop early next season.
Yeah.
Because the offense is that good. Just like I think a team would have tried to trade for him at the deadline this year if the Nats were willing to give him up for not as much as they were asking for. And they might have played him down the stretch. Just like the Nats have played him at shortstop kind of in perpetuity throughout his career to this point. Even though he was never really their best defensive shortstop since Nassim Nunez has been on the roster. The offense is so good, you can justify the expense a little bit, especially as a second division team that isn't winning anything. That tells me, hopefully, they're looking to turn a corner and get into competition mode as well to actually start winning some baseball games. Because if you're just playing out these 77-win seasons or trying to build something where it doesn't matter that much because you're still in a developmental phase, then you could play Abrams at shortstop probably. But by actually prioritizing your defense enough that you're moving him to second, it tells me you're maybe turning a little corner in that regard as well. The agent for Abrams, Sanders from Roc Nation, doubled down that his assertion, meaning Abrams' assertion, that he views himself as a shortstop long-term is how he feels. indicated that his client intends to spend the winter focused on improving his defense at his preferred position. So here's the issue with that. And this is not a knock on CJ. I really, really like the player. He has known for years that he has struggled defensively at short. He has put in a ton of work. We talk to him at spring training. Every single year we have the same conversation with CJ Abrams about his defense and all the work that he put in and how hard he grinded over the offseason. This was not a new thing that he might not stick at shortstop. Mm-hmm. Since his earliest days with the Padres, people have wondered, despite his immense athleticism, if he was going to be a shortstop. That was in 2022. I mean, that was like three kids in a house in a van ago for me. You know, a lot has happened since then. In 2023, he was a bad defensive shortstop. In 2024, he was a bad defensive shortstop. In 2025, he was a bad defensive shortstop. And this year, he's been a bad defensive shortstop. Again, not knocking him or trying to crush him. He's one of my favorite players in baseball. He's awesome offensively. He's just not a shortstop. So putting in more work this offseason after a bunch of offseasons where you put in the work knowing you might not stay at short, it's not. There's no breakthrough coming here. Like, this is what it is. We have enough sample of 650 games and, you know, 2,500 at-bats worth of baseball to say you have been statistically over that time arguably the worst shortstop in baseball. Certainly in the bottom 5 percentile, as evidenced by all of the numbers, Savant, things that we
so
have.
So when I read that, I rolled my eyes. I went,
I get what they're saying.
This isn't new.
They're like, give him some time. He's going to work this out. And it's like, no. This is 5 years in now.
I'm going, you've had a lot of time, respectfully.
Yeah.
And again, I just want to clarify this for some folks. Some people say it's a position switch. What's the big deal? There is a mystique and there's a glamour with shortstop more so than pretty much any other defensive position. It's where the best player plays until you get to the major leagues. Then you see great gold glove defenders in center or third base and everywhere else. You can be a superstar defensively at those positions. But as a kid, the best athlete, where does he go? Shortstop. And that's true until, you know, you're kind of through college and maybe even in parts of the minors.
But let me go one step further. It's not uncommon that guys have to change positions in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
But it almost never happens with the best player on a team. And other than James Wood or even with him, this is a perennial all-star. So how many guys that are all-stars annually, which Abrams has become that kind of guy, are being asked to change positions? It's very, very rare. A guy like Nico Hoerner, who's a really good player and a gold glove defender for the Chicago Cubs, had to move off shortstop for second base when they spent a ton of money on Dansby Swanson. Abrams is a bigger star than Swanson, just to give you an idea of the comp there. Like, you move over when you're able to acquire a guy like C.J. Abrams if you're Nico Hoerner, who is a glove-first player. So, yeah, this is a big deal. Also, the timing of it's crazy, which I want to double down on next as to how the timing came about. But to go to him, and I'm glad that they did. This is not me questioning them doing it, because every day is the right day, as far as I'm concerned, to move him off the position.
We agree there,
But it is a little bit stunning that in the middle of this career year, while he's having this unreal stretch, finally turning into the player they've wanted all along and becoming one of the most talked about studs in baseball offensively, that's when you're going to say, hey, by the way, now we're going to do this thing that he feels is a demotion and humiliating in a lot of ways. That part of it is odd, and I just wonder how they would explain that away. But let's open up the phones for Nats fans next. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. Do you agree with me that this will make it much harder to get an extension done and that this makes it more likely that Abrams is probably traded this offseason? You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan talking Nats baseball and CJ Abrams. Our baseball discussion on the show is presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi, one price, 5 years guaranteed Xfinity. Imagine that. The Nats saying CJ Abrams is moving to second base. I don't mind doing it now. I think him getting to play some second down the stretch helps him to figure out what he needs to work on this offseason to be a good second baseman. But it does seem to go against the argument that they weren't moving him before because it would lower his trade value when his trade value still matters into the offseason. So the why now is the one thing I can't answer.
Here's what I'm guessing. And again, this is me guessing. They've talked to enough people. The trade deadline came and went, and you know, whether you were planning on trading him or not, I don't think they were because he was hitting the cover off the ball and they were in the wild card hunt. They found out that nobody was really that interested in him being a shortstop. more than like a week or something at a time, and they'd have to move him the way a lot of guys when they change teams think. A-Rod, think, you know, Bo Bichette in New York moved off a shortstop, and guys do that. But the incumbent moving is a little bit different, right? When somebody new comes in. So I don't think anybody really was interested there, and they said, okay, well, this is the best baseball decision. Now that we're out of it, we can afford. He's already put in the deposits where he's had this unbelievable year. If his feathers are ruffled, he's not the same guy down the stretch. He's not here long-term anyway. I think that's how we got here.
So you're definitely on board then that he's more likely getting traded after the move.
I think this was NBA Jam style, the nail in the coffin.
Interesting. Yeah, I was probably 60 to 70% confident that they were going to try to trade him this offseason. Now that's closer to like 90%.
Yeah, I'm at 90.
Now, whether they can get the deal done or not, I'm not sure. I think it could go to the deadline next year again because you have to get the right package. This is such a special player, such a talented guy. You're not just taking the best offer. You're not going, hey, we need to trade C.J. Abrams before opening day, so put out feelers, and whatever the best offer is, we'll take that. I think you actually get choosy here, and you go, here's the bar. You got to pass this.
Yeah.
And until someone's willing to do that, you're not trading. So if it doesn't happen this offseason, it might take till the deadline a year from now. But I do think he gets traded, and I'm more confident in that after this position change. Let's go to Chris in Hyattsville. What's up, Chris?
How you doing, guys?
Hey, man.
A couple things here. So, to answer your question, why do it now, Grant? I don't think they do this if they're still competitive, because they would not want to upset the apple cart, so to speak. But Agreed. They're not really competitive anymore. And there's nothing to gain by keeping him at shortstop. He's going into arbitration again this year. This is about setting the precedent that you are no longer a shortstop. It's a lot easier to negotiate with a second baseman than it is a shortstop.
True. Yeah, the money you're willing to pay him changes. And so by moving him to second, they're saying what they're going to say behind closed doors, which is, you're not a shortstop. We're not going to pay you like a shortstop.
Yeah, if they go into that argument, they'll go, look at the defensive run save metric, how bad it is, and you're a second baseman. Yeah.
And I don't think that ownership's going to pay him anyway, Chris, but I guess it's possible that they could offer him, you know, 8 and 220 or whatever, and say, here's the elite second baseman money we're willing to give you, even though he wants probably, you know, shortstop money, which is closer to 300 mil.
But this is what I really want to understand of who is in his camp that's telling him he should still be a shortstop in this league. I mean, he sees the stats. He's not ignorant. He's a smart guy. He knows what the stats say. Every defensive metric you can think of, whether it's StatCast, FanGraphs, outs above replacement, whatever, Ozer, they all say he is categorically one of the worst starting shortstops in baseball. Either his agent is either incompetent or lying to CJ to tell him what he wants to hear. And he's not the first, like you said, he's not the first guy. He won't be the last guy to have to get off this position. I mean, I can't think of a bigger prospect in baseball than Fernando Tatis Jr. a couple years ago, who was told, you're no longer the shortstop of the San Diego Padres. And he turned himself into a platinum glove outfielder.
Well, I'll say this. We're up against it. I got to let you go. Thanks, Chris. I think he's going to put in the work wherever he ends up to be okay there, whether it's second or the outfield or whatever. And it's not like he said no. He didn't pull a Rafael Devers and say, trade me, I'm not playing there. Mm-hmm. He begrudgingly took the assignment. Your point about the agents, the best one, that's really interesting. I wonder if behind the scenes they are having that tough conversation with him that they need to have, which is, hey, bro, let's look at the data here. First percentile fielding run value this year, seventh percentile last year, first percentile the year before that, ninth percentile the year before that, ninth percentile the year before that. Like, you're not a shortstop. If as long as they're doing that behind the scenes to help kind of prepare him mentally, then they're doing their job. He publicly, the agent should be arguing that he's a shortstop.
Yeah, it's his job is to advocate.
Absolutely. So I just would love to know what he's saying behind the scenes. Like, Scott Boras is not going to come out and tell you all the flaws of his player. He's going to make it sound like he's the greatest player at ever, whatever position gets the most money. Jared in Richmond, real quick, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I think that now is the right time to do it, not just because they're out of the running, but that's part of it. The other part is I want to get a look at what him as second looks like before the offseason to have kind of a baseline to go from. Some of the issues that have caused problems for him at shortstop could also be an issue for him at second base. And I want to know, can he play second a little better? Do we need to look at moving him to the outfield? And I don't think this affects extension talks in him either way, because this team, this analytical-minded front office, was never going to extend him as a shortstop. If they're going to extend him, it's going to be as a center fielder, as a second baseman. So I think they're probably more likely to trade him than not, but I don't think that doing this now really has a big impact there one way or the other.
I agree. The difference, though, the reason I disagree with that is he is going to be less inclined to talk extension after you've done this, in his mind, I think.
He's going, I'm having this season, this year?
He feels
you
slighted.
Do this now?
Yeah.
That's his perspective.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Mike Florio next. I want to talk about the Bills' new stadium and some of the warning signs for the Commanders after they had a rough first week opening up their stadium in the preseason. Plus, is there actually going to be a team playing internationally like Roger Goodell says there will be? Next on G&D.